All right, we're back again. The Casino Guitars Podcast.
What an original name.
I know, right?
We spent hours.
Who thought that one
out? Hours and hours of research and development, marketing meetings.
Way to go, Sean.
Come up with this thing. Well, we have a very special guest today. Good friend of mine, Mr. John Martin.
Hello.
So he's going to join us and tell us some probably amazing stories. And who knows what we will get into. So, John, thanks for
absolutely. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure and it's an honor to be here with in such fine company.
You didn't have to get so dressed up. So for those of us that are not being able to see John, he's wearing sort of a tuxedo with a tie-dye shirt on. You got some tie-dye freaking shoes, too. I just noticed those. This is badass.
The shoes got a mess.
That's just me, man.
You love it, man. He's got the...
John is always the most stylish.
I don't know about that.
You look good, my favorite is your college shirt.
Yeah, I like that one. Yeah.
He's got this great t-shirt he wears when we play. It just says college across it, which is kind of amazing.
No college specifically, just college.
I've been, believe me.
Sean's got a degree there from college. It's the School of Hard Knocks.
So John is a drummer, percussionist. You are playing for Out of Wild South.
Out of Wild South, yes.
Which is a fantastic sort of Allman Brothers. I almost hesitate. Like, it is a tribute band, but I don't know. It feels slightly different to
me. That's what it's pigeonholed and what it's called.
Right.
And but it is a truly an Allman Brothers tribute band or Allman Brothers band, because we only do Allman Brothers music.
That's right.
Yeah. There's a couple, one or two songs that we do that Dwayne did that is called Dimples. I think John Lee Hooker used to do it.
Yep.
And Dwayne used to love it, and so therefore, you know, since Dwayne loved it and played it, well, every now and then we'll play it. And it gets a great response.
Yeah,
you know?
No, that's cool.
Good, cool blues tune, but we put a really neat twist on it.
Very cool. Now you and I have played together.
Many
quite
times.
A bit.
Yep.
And it's always super fun. I'm the least important person you've ever played with. So.
I don't know about that. I wouldn't say that now. Let's back that up.
Finally, something Jonathan and I can agree on. Yeah. We spend most of our time disagreeing. I like that one.
But you've done some pretty cool stuff. Like, you've hung out with Allman Brothers guys.
Yep.
You've hung out with, we'll probably talk about Harvey a little bit.
Yep.
Tell us some cool stories.
I can't tell you how fortunate and lucky I have been to be able to have been in the midst of some of those people. It's just been a really, really fun ride. Being around those people is sort of different. It's a different world. It ups your game, for one thing.
Sure.
It really does. But people have asked me, like, man, I bet you've got 1,000 autographs. And I don't think I have one. Don't think I do. I mean, that's when you're in the middle of that, and when you're backstage with these people, asking them to sign an autograph is the last damn thing that you want to talk about. I mean, it's you when you're there with them in the middle, you're part of them. You're part of that family, you know. And so
would be odd.
you go from being a fan to part of the family when you're with them,
right.
You know. And there's a big difference there.
I can't imagine you asking for an autograph anyways. I just can't imagine a scenario where, like, John Martin's going to be like, hey, can I have your autograph?
If I heard that, I'd be like, man, really?
Yeah, really.
Who is this person? My God.
It doesn't really suit me that way.
No, not really.
But I have that one, though. I've had one autograph in my whole life that I've asked. I didn't even ask for it. It was Lou Reed. And it's just because I met him at some book signing event for some poetry book he had. And then they gave us, like, these headshots, like, to go up and talk to him, and he just, like, signed it, and I was like, I just let him know I liked his shows, and he just growled at me and spit on the floor.
Right.
Exactly what I expected Lou Reed to do.
Right.
But I could care less. I have the autograph somewhere back there in the shop,
but I don't
really care about it. It's not a thing.
It's not anything that you're necessarily...
I much more enjoy the story I just told
about
Lou Reed than, like, oh, he signed this piece of paper with his name on it. It's like, signed guitars don't do anything for me either.
No.
Autographs are, like, a weird thing anyways
that unless you like a Harley Benton guitar, then I want it to be signed.
Well, right. It's like you
by
would
Dale
rather
Wilson.
You'd rather have, like, the story of you interacting with this person, and maybe I'll hit it off on a personal level than the story of, oh, I saw him and then I said sign this and that was it, you know?
Well, it's sort of like, that's like the, you go to, like, a country in Europe and you do the touristy shit versus like you know, you meet some dude in the bathroom and then you have a drink. That's like going and, you know, hanging out in the countryside with
everybody. So what kind of guys are you meeting in the bathroom, John?
You never know. You never know, Baxter.
You never do.
I mean, no, I know what kind. Usually, I'm just sort of leaving that to your imagination.
That was your New York stuff. That's a whole different scene.
I think when you meet guys in the bathroom, it's all the same scene, brother.
Jonathan was on that side.
George Michael, whoever, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, on a side note, I would have loved to have met George Michaels in the bathroom. Just to have a conversation. I mean, it would be fun.
Like, word?
No, like, it'd be fun. Like, how much what a great conversation he'd have. Like
in the bathroom, yeah,
wherever you meet him, he'd be a fun guy to meet.
He probably would.
I met Boy George and all those guys. They're great conversationalists.
The best.
The Brits are the best. Or when I took little Sam Schneiderman to Ireland and he fell in the urinal, not once, but twice. Because, you know, the big trough urinals they have over in the UK? That kid was so clumsy.
He probably pushed him.
I like to. That's what I was. Vex was
like, gave him a nudge.
No, but like the second time, like we knew it was going to happen because he's so clumsy. And like I had my camera out ready for it almost.
All
like,
right.
Not that I was filming teenagers in the bathroom or anything. But when he started, I got that phone out immediately. And like I'm in there with a whole bunch of folks and we're laughing. The guys, I'm filming. I got on film somewhere on my phone. This poor teenager's falling in the toilet.
I like to imagine he's like slipping and sliding over and over.
It was just like that. It was like one of those TikToks you'd see where the guy's like slipping, and bam into the toilet. Sorry, continue your real conversation. I'm gone. I hate all of you.
All right, bathroom talk aside. So, John, how did you first like meet anybody in that world? Butch, or who was the first person you sort of met in that Allman Brothers kind of?
Long time ago, I crossed paths with, and this guy was a dear friend of mine. He was like 40 when I met him, but or even 42 maybe. But you remember the West Coast band Spirit?
Yep.
The drummer with them was Ed Cassidy.
Yep.
The bald headed dude. I met him, and we remained friends up until 2012 when he died, and he was just a couple of months away from being 90 when he passed away. So we knew each other for quite a long time, you know. We used to send each other gifts from time to time. And I forgot to send him a gift that I normally do on a yearly basis. And he called me up, but I always used to send him peach preserves. And I used to buy them at these little peach stands off of 85 down in South Carolina, little jars of it. And I'd always pick a couple up and I'd send them to him. He lived in Arroyo Grande, California, right on the coast between L.A. and San Francisco, about halfway up. And I get a phone call from him one day and he said, hey, man, how you been? I went, I've been fine. And then he all of a sudden just turned and he said, where in the hell are my damn peach preserves? And I went, okay.
God, sorry.
So... Then I made a trip down that way to specifically get him his damn peach preserves. So anyway, satisfied that. But Ed and I were friends for a long time. But there's a couple that I'd like to really mention. One is a guy by the name of Harvey Dalton Arnold. He was with the Outlaws back during their peak years, back when they were, you know, playing in front of, you know, 50,000 people and stuff like that.
No big deal. Small crowds.
Yeah, small crowd. Yeah, it's going to be an intimate crowd tonight, fellas. How many? What is 38,000 people there? Okay. No big deal. But anyway, Harvey and I met many, many years ago, and we became friends. We both had some medical issues that we were trying to get through at the time, and that was about 20 years ago or so. He got through his, I got through mine, and when we did, we started playing some together. And we've done a lot of shows, and one thing I want to bring up is one of the hosts here that invited me to do this thing, I invited him to come play a show with us one time, non-rehearsed, unrehearsed, and of course, you know, he didn't know any of us except for me. And we showed up, and when you're playing on this level, it's funny because when you say, I want to bring a guy in, the other guys don't question it because they trust you. You know, it's a different level.
You just sort of know, hey, if, you know, if John vouches for this guy.
Right, but, right, know, right.
He's going to be okay. Yeah.
So anyway, we put it together and it was an outdoor concert at Queens University in Charlotte, North Carolina. And we kicked the first song off, and Harvey gave him the nod to take a lead. And about halfway through the lead, Harvey just turns around to me. I'm sitting on drums and turns around to me and smiles really big and gives me a thumbs up, because that meant that, yeah, this guy's all right. You know?
You didn't ruin it, John. Way to go.
Yeah, good move. Good call.
Not a total hack. Yeah.
Oh, God. So
that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. But I was I got to meet and hang out a good bit with Butch Trucks with the Allman Brothers Band. And I have to attribute that to my good friend Bruce Katz. I know I'm throwing a lot of names out, but if you'll remember some of these names and look them up, you'll see who they are. But Bruce Katz is a keyboard extraordinaire. He tours with his own band all over Europe and this country. He and I played a lot of shows together. But he invited me when Butch was doing the Freight Train Band and to come do some road stuff with him. So I did, and it was funny. One night, Butch was sitting. Butch and I were sitting in a restaurant, and we were talking. It was a small table, just a table for two. And he'd say something, and I'd lean over and say, "What did you say?" And I'd say something. He'd lean over, "What did you say?" And then finally, he looked at me and he said, "You can't hear a damn thing either, can you?" And I guess it's being a drummer, because my hearing is pretty bad. But Butch was, you know, he's not here to defend himself, but he's, as you know, he's passed away, but. He was deaf as a doornail. I mean, he couldn't hear a damn thing, but he was the best storyteller I've ever been around in my life. And of course he had a lot of stories to tell.
I'm sure he did.
Absolutely. But yeah. He had some good ones.
I can imagine you would acquire some.
Yeah.
I met Butch myself. It's funny.
Yeah.
I met him down at a charity golf tournament in South Carolina, which was, and I had no idea who this guy was.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hanging out with him for the whole day.
He was probably loud, talking loud.
Yeah, we were just having fun. I had no idea. Like, it's for hours. Can't hear himself. Hanging out. We're just talking trash, you know, and like just like guys do. And then he's like, "What do you do?" I'm like, "I'm in a band in New York." He's like, "Oh, I'm in a band too." I'm like, "Cool." And then I tell him my name, and he tells me his band's name. I'm like, "Oh."
Yeah, you're in a real band.
Oh. Yeah, your band's a real thing. It's at least the Allman Brothers drummer, if people don't know that are listening.
Right.
But phenomenal guy. Then we sort of hit it off. Then when he's like, "Well, I'm up in New York. How about I reach out and we get together?" I'm like, "Okay, sure." I figured I'd never hear from him again.
Right.
So they come to New York to do the Beacon Run.
Yeah.
They reach out. They play the Beacon Theater for a month. They have their own houses up there, their own apartments. So
that's right.
There. Yeah, but they sent a limo to pick me up, take me to the Beacon. I'm sitting there side stage with them, go hang out in the green room, which is not a very nice green room at the Beacon, by the way.
Right.
And I thought they're going to be partying hard. The only thing they're doing is smoking a little bit. So it's very disappointing in that respect.
Yep.
But and M&Ms, I remember lots of M&Ms. And but then they invited me over to Jersey to go see their recording of an album then. And so they sent a limo again, which I thought was I've never been in a limo before.
Right.
You know, or a town car for that be it. And then they brought me over and I hung out. It's like me and some of the family are in the control room while they're recording. Everything's just, they're just jamming. They're like ripping it up.
Oh, yeah.
Then they stop. And they finish the song. And everything's really still. And all of a sudden, the entire place goes up in smoke. Everyone just gets their joints out and starts lighting up. And it was the coolest thing. Like, it was orchestrated, because none of them do anything else besides that. They're all like recovered, I guess. I don't know if Butch was smoking. I just remember like the other guys certainly were. And that's when our guy, Tedeschi and Truck, Trucks was playing with them.
Oh, Derek.
Not Tedeschi. Yeah. That's when they were first hooking up.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was remembering saying, "It's like, oh yeah, like Derek's got like
doing with it.
Derek's got a baby coming out or something coming soon or something."
Yeah, I'd like to clarify something. So many people come up to me and start talking to me about Butch Truck's son, Derek. No, it's his nephew. It's his brother's son. Let's clear that up right now.
They were so nice, and I remember too that one day, like I think it was Butch telling me the story. He likes stories, as you said. He said, "We're recording one of our records up here, and they had a new engineer. He came in to wipe the tapes before we recorded, but he'd accidentally wiped the tapes from our recording session the day before. So because you have to clean the tapes, like to get them ready for recording. And he deleted all the Allman Brothers recordings for a whole day.
Oh.
And so that guy just disappeared. He never came to work the next day, and he just decided that was it for him in show business, and we never heard from him again.
Oh, no.
He was just so mortified.
Oh, no.
You just delete the Allman Brothers.
Wow.
Besides, I mean, that would suck.
They didn't care. I mean, it's like, it was jam
again. Yeah,
like,
jam, yeah.
We'll do this every day.
Right.
I know, I was like, but that's my Allman Brothers story. Now I'm leaving again. Bye.
You know, you mentioned Beacon Theater. My friend Bruce Katz is from New York, lives right outside the city. And you may have met him and don't realize
it. Sure, but I did.
Because he would always be invited as a guest. Because, you know, when they did that Beacon run, it was like 15 shows or something like that, you know, in about 3 or 4 weeks, you know. And they would bring a lot of guests on, you know, stage with them. But Bruce Katz used to get invited a lot and to come on stage and play with them. And usually if Bruce was, you know, going to do a piano thing, then Greg would stay off the piano. And they'd usually have a piano set up like stage left, you know, because Greg was always on stage right, yeah, period. Right. They'd have a keyboard set up over there, and Bruce would, you know, pop in over there and just burn it up for a little bit. And
that dude's a monster player, man.
Oh, yeah.
He's like
absolutely
stupid good.
I guess he's okay. Yep.
Super, super player, you know. He's okay. Yeah, and he's a good friend, too. I mean, that's the funny part, you know. He stayed at my house a few times, and we've had a big time together, you know.
That's awesome.
Neat guy. He and I are, I won't give out his age, but I'll just say it that, you know,
late
30s. He and I are the same age.
Experienced. Yeah, well right. Experienced.
And by late 30s, I mean your birth year.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. No, you jammed with, he jammed with you guys in Ottawa South, Johnny Neal, too, right?
Johnny Neal, yes. Player. Johnny Neal has played several shows with us. We always just fly him in from Nashville to wherever the closest spot we're playing and take him from there. But Johnny Neal is, he's had a stroke recently, but yep. He has played with us a few times and several times. And he is such a wonderful human being and a great, great player. And to be blind and to be born blind, he is absolutely unbelievable. I mean, we've had a lot of good times with Johnny Neal. There's no doubt about that. You know,
okay.
He's been a great guy to be around.
Well, it's cool because you and I were doing a lot of stuff. This was pre-COVID when he was first starting playing with you guys. Right. And I thought it was so cool and a huge compliment when he was like, hey, I mean, when you've played with the actual Allman Brothers.
Yeah, right.
And then you find a group of guys who are doing that music and you're like, hey, I like you guys. This feels right. I'm going to start playing with you guys too.
And that's really what happened.
It is,
yeah,
right.
That now, really I mean, is,
that's,
yeah.
That's pretty...
Yeah.
It's like the ultimate nod.
Right. Exactly. Right? Exactly. Like I mean, quote unquote, you guys know how to do it right.
Right.
You know, and that's a quote. And it's just a matter of, you know, being around guys like that is just so different. And as I said a minute ago, when you get a guy like that around, it just ups everybody's game. You know, it really does. Yeah. Just kind of makes things a little different.
Well, when you guys play, it's like, you know, when you see the Allman Brothers, they're not playing the same stuff every night. You know what I mean? It's the same song, but they take it to a different place.
Right.
That's what you guys do, and we've talked about before.
There's a lot of improvised
tributes, and it's like, well, we're doing the show from, you know, the blah, 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 this night, the third performance, and it has to be note for note. Like,
Lord, that would be stupid.
I don't think we could do that, okay? I don't think I'm capable.
I don't want to do that.
I don't want to do it.
No.
I think Derek Trucks could do it, but I think the rest of the Allman Brothers could not do that.
No.
They're like, what? Where were we?
Wait a minute.
Really defeats this.
What are we doing? You know,
that's what I think. I think it's the opposite of the spirit
of what it is. And it's like, you know, we've all played with people who are naturally like that, no matter what talent level they are at.
Right.
I played with a guy one time. He's like, "Well, we were doing Wish You Were Here." He's like, "That's not how Gilmore played the solo."
I don't really care.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, why would I want to play like that?
Right. No, because he's one of the greatest guitar players in the history of the world.
Oh, sure.
Exactly. Exactly.
That is one, Sean. Get to it. I'm sorry.
Whatever.
I'm a flashback. Go ahead. Sorry. Okay. Flashback here. But no, I was thinking about the aspect of making money doing this as well. And like, you get paid to play drums and percussion and things. And I was laughing when I was talking to Butch's wife, who is wonderful. She was telling me about the good old days back when they were, you know, doing the Fillmore East and everything. And she's like, we were one of the biggest bands in the world, and we were all still living in trailers.
Yeah.
Down there. And then we went over to our manager's house, and we saw that he was living in his mansion. That's when we knew we were getting robbed blind. And they were.
Yeah.
And that's just note to young bands out there. You don't need managers, most likely. Just do it, man.
Till you absolutely can't. You have to have one.
Unless
you know,
your manager's like your boys, like your best friend, like one on the crew, like growing up with you, doing the same hustle. Is watch out for those guys in suits
living in the trailer next door.
Yep.
Exactly. As long as you're living in the same trailer, you're fine.
It's gotta be tough. Like going out playing the biggest shows, 30,000, 20,000 people, and like you're staying in these nice hotels, and you go home and cram there together.
Right.
Yeah. So this is a funny story. I'm done. Sean, go ahead.
Getting back to Idlewild South, they really like us up north. I'd like to say that. They really do. And, of course, the Allman Brothers were super successful in the northern part, the country. But they really like us up there. And I think it's got something to do with us southern boys going up north and entertaining and rocking their damn socks off and playing this sweet music. Because there are plenty of people up there that play this music. But when you got these guys from the South that come up, maybe it's something a little bit mystical, perhaps magical. I don't know, but it's something about it because they just like us. They treat us like royalty up there. And, we get treated well everywhere we go, but
there's an authenticity to
I
think that's true.
Exactly.
Playing his guitar and that sort of passed down historical, it's almost like a bard.
Right, right.
You're telling the tale. You grew up down here. You're from the soil.
Yep.
You're probably going to end up in the soil.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're playing the music that came from our roots.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of leads me to, for you, how did you get into this? Was it I love the Allman Brothers, and you just started playing with, some guys who wanted to do it? Or was it more of just, a coincidence,
Of how I got with them?
Idlewild, yeah.
With Idlewild. It's funny. that's a really good question. It's a great answer. The truth is, I was playing with Harvey one night at a theater. And this band called Idlewild South was going to open for us, which was a perfect thing, And, of course, we were the headliner of the night, so we did our sound check first. And as soon as I walked off the stage, a guy comes up to me and introduces himself, and it was Don Eason, and who actually manages manages the internal business of the band, not the external. We have management that does that. But he comes up to me and he says, "Hey man," he said, "my name's Don Eason." He said, "I'd like to know if you'd like to sit in with us tonight." And I kind of looked at him and I thought, "Well, what do you do? What do you play? What stuff do you do?" And he said, "Well, we don't do anything except Allman Brothers Band. It's just, we're an Allman Brothers Band tribute, And I went, "Oh, hell yeah, that's no problem. I can do that, So we played and opened, and at the end of the show, a day or two later, he called me and asked me if I'd, want to do some more dates with him. And I told him that my calendar was sort of full, but I'd like to play with him when I could. And that worked out pretty good. For about a year, I was doing some dates with him. Not all the dates that they were doing, but I was doing some dates. And then it got to the point where he just said, "Why don't you can you join the band?" I said, "Yeah, I think I can do it now." So that's when we did that. Yeah,
that's
so
super cool. Like a natural progression.
It just happened, I was just happened to be at that place and it worked out that way. So, that's how that came about.
Yeah, no, that's super cool.
And that was, I don't know, probably 6 years ago or so, something like that. I don't remember. 5 or 6, something, Time flies when you're having fun.
There you go.
Yeah.
How long has Idlewild been around?
Idlewild, we're heading now. We have been together a 10-year period.
Okay.
So we're now pushing into 11, our second, period. But
decade two.
We've had some personnel changes, just like everybody else. But right now, I think we've got a really strong lineup right now.
Cool.
Just brought on a good friend of mine, a guy by the name of Mark Mulholland from Long Island, New York, by way of Charlotte. And I've played many, many shows with him in the past. And he is an Allman Brothers fanatic, so that kind of helped. But I've actually been trying to get him for a long time, but we finally were able to come to terms and make this happen. So.
Now, did he... You had a band around Charlotte area called
Traffic Jam.
For
I had
for
that
years.
Thing for years. Yeah,
Mark played with you then, right?
A lot of he did. I can't tell you how many shows we did together.
Okay.
Yes,
yeah,
but
yeah.
He was playing with Traffic Jam with me for a long time, off and on.
Cool.
Yep. Absolutely.
That's it's pretty awesome. Now, mm-hmm. just if you've never seen Idlewild South, they got two drummers, a full percussion kit. Right. They haul a real B3 organ. There's no Nords on stage. It's like the giant wooden organ and the giant wooden Leslie cabinet that has its own trailer.
We're actually furniture movers.
I mean, pretty much, right? Like this is a large, like it is like seeing. Oh, it's, you know.
When we set up on stage, you look up there and it looks like, God almighty, that you can open a music store up there, you know.
I mean, it's a lot of folks.
Unbelievable. A lot of stuff.
I feel like there's plenty of groups who probably carry the gear, but that spirit that you're kind of carrying on with, like, the jam aspect and keeping it alive
is,
you know, huge to all that. And, you know, of course, the gear always helps. You know what I mean? But that's, I think it's really cool that you guys actually do that rather than, you know, the full-on tribute of, like, we're playing this show from, you know, 1983, and it's this exact set, so.
Yeah, that's less fun to me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It would feel like, oh, wow, you know, maybe, and I feel like that's got to be a huge part of why it's such a good band, as well as that everybody within the band seems like they're all on that page of, like, well, we got to be us while we're, you know, honoring something that is also a part of us.
Right, right.
Well, I mean, from having like Johnny Neal to having Bruce Katz play with you guys to having, you know, Lamar
Williams Jr. Played with us. Yeah, his father was an Auburn brother.
Well, the fact that they love you guys so much in Macon and the Big House that you do that every year. That's just, you know, all those things kind of point to the fact that there really is like an authenticity to the spirit of what you guys do.
And we have been accepted by the Macon group, GABA, which is Georgia Allman Brothers Band Association.
Right.
I mean, we played the big stage with them last year, last September. We've been going down there and playing for a few years now, and we'll be back again this year, you know.
Yeah.
We host what is called the pre-GABA jam, and we have their musicians really from all over the country, and sometimes other countries, you know, come in and get a slot, you know, and play a song or two with us, you know. But we host that. And that sort of kicks off the entire weekend, you know. And but we have been, I guess you could say, really accepted. And the reason for it is because we are very unpretentious. We're no nonsense. Yeah. We're in it for the music, and we try to do what we're supposed to do with the music, and that's try to play it and give it justice, you know.
Yeah.
And that's what we do.
Well, I mean, Baxter and I have done videos before. We talked about there's sort of like this family tree aspect to that Southern rock.
Oh, absolutely. It is, yes.
And it just seems like you guys are in it.
Well, which is I'd like to think so. You know.
You know what I mean? But in a real, you know, in a very concrete way.
Yeah, and not in, you know, like you were saying, none of this, it's never seemed pretentious to me at all. You know, whenever I've talked to Jonathan and he's told me stories about your guys' stuff and talking to you too, it seems like it is really like, we're a part of this kind of like lineage thing.
Yeah.
It's a bigger thing than us. And it's never like, I played with so-and-so. Gotcha. And I was like, no, it's like these are like crazy people and they're just amazing. Like just to be in the same room with them.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
I do have, and this is something that Don Eason actually put on Facebook about me. I've always had an alter ego, meaning I've always been two people. I don't know how that works, but I've always been two people. And I'm also a published writer, and that is something that is I've been writing for a long time, and I write under a pen name of Roland J. Beckerman is my pen name, but that's just an alter ego thing. And I've got two published books with a third one in the works right now with my publishing company. And it's been really successful and rewarding. One of the reasons I'm saying this is because in the second and third book, I do make a lot of references to music. I just couldn't help it. I had to, you know.
Yeah.
But in these books, I am pretty much what I am, you know. I'm also other things. As I said, it's an alter ego. I'm two people, but always have been. It is a fun avenue to do. And of course, you know, my website is RolandJBeckerman.com. Really easy to remember. But I do have, you know, two published books with a third one in the works with I'll probably start on the fourth one whenever I feel like it, you know.
Okay. Now, what style are the books in?
I write about medical malpractice is what I write about.
Okay. I didn't expect that.
I coined, well, actually, I didn't coin it, but my business partner, who happens to be a lawyer.
Medical malpractice? Wait, did I step into a time warp?
Yes. Yeah.
It's like my wife.
I write about...
my wife's father wrote, he's an insurance guy, and he wrote a book about like insurance murder scams.
Oh, really?
Or something. It's called the, I think it was, what was it called? The Death Note?
Yeah.
Or something like that. Well, interesting. Taylor, what's the name of it? Was it Death Note? That's the...
I was about to say, there's like
yeah, that's the anime there. Yeah. Oh, they can't be death now. Death.
Well, that's an interesting thing. Yeah.
Well, it's like where people like people kill people for like they take out insurance on like Sean.
Yeah.
And then like then I have Jonathan kill Sean, but I get collecting insurance on. He doesn't know there's insurance taken out on him, so people are like doing that. But the worst part about this book though is he recorded an audiobook with me, and we got to the end, and I've never read the book. I'm just listening to him tell it, and I see there's like five pages left. I'm like, you son of a bitch! This is gonna be a cliffhanger, isn't it? And then it is a cliffhanger. I was like, God. I didn't want to sit through another 26 hours of listening to
right.
my father-in-law read a book.
Right, right, right.
Goodness sake, that son of a gun.
Well, speaking of cliffhangers, I ended book two as a super cliffhanger, and book three is also a cliffhanger. But see, there's a reason for that.
I know. Book four.
Book four, five, six, seven, eight.
But
you
I'm
know.
Still going to pitch my favorite, like, you know, my Jack Campbell sci-fi books I love. Like, he ends with, like, there's more that can be opened up afterwards, but he's still, there's a finite end.
There's some resolution.
I remember this one book, like, you get to the end, it's like, and then he stares at the plane, writing out, we don't know if he's going to live or die. And then, like, you, no. I want to see the fluffy teddy bears come and do some adventure. And then
well, so there's such an art to that, to writing. And what I do is I build it up and I get some resolve.
Right.
I get some resolution. But in the very end, it's opening up more doors.
And that's
for
good.
More resolution
there's,
later.
There's got to be another problem, right?
Yeah, right. There has to be. I mean, the world's full of problems.
It's all tension and drama. Yeah.
We solve it, and then all of a sudden we get them introduced
it's
again.
It's like television. I like that a lot. Like I love the Hunger Games. I love the Twilight Saga. Mm-hmm. Saga. I like saying that. It's so funny because it's so absurd. But there's a finite end to it. It's kind of like a TV show. When it goes too long, it turns to trash.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Sopranos too long a little bit. I'm hoping Yellowstone doesn't go that route. I hope they have an end. Bowser Galactica perfect. Breaking Bad perfect.
Right.
Big one. Walking Dead. Terrible.
Man. Yeah, Walking Dead. No, that's horrible. It should have died a long time ago. Yeah.
And that's like the I Am Number Six books, too. Like that or I Am Number whatever it is. Yeah. Those are great first few books. And then, but the movie bomb, so there's like 13 books.
Right.
It's like, come on, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, there's a thing I love sometimes in fantasy, like Tolkien, right? And they don't do this in the movie because people don't have the attention span for it. Like, they solve all the problems, and then there's that period where they tie up every loose end, and you get to see everybody, like, in
right.
life is okay for a moment. You know what I mean? Yellowstone does that because at the end of...
Don't tell me.
I'm not going to tell you a spoiler, but the end of one of the seasons, everything is, like, everyone is so happy, and everything's kind of okay, and you just know everything is about to go to shit. Yeah. Because, like, everyone's so happy, and you can just see it. You're like, oh, my God, because the more happy they are, the more things
well,
can just go to
tragedy,
hell.
Right.
That's, well,
that's
right,
how,
you know?
It's always set up.
But I love that idea. The end of those Wheel of Time books, at the end, you
well,
can see how everything...
Like, the Last Kingdom kind of has that,
right.
too. It's like, oh, Uhtred's going to be fine. He's a slave now. Oh, there goes his family. They're dead.
Sorry. Nah. Yeah,
if you marry Uhtred, you know you're fucked.
Right.
It's just true. Like, it's, yeah. God, he's so good looking, too. John.
There's one guy that I have failed to mention that I really do want to mention. And he was a very good friend of mine, and he has passed away. There is a real problem. I guess when you get to be my age, people that you're close with do happen to pass away. And I've outlived many of them. But there was one guy that I really, really enjoyed being around, and he did a lot for me, a guy by the name of Jamie Oldacre. Jamie was introduced to Eric Clapton by some of the guys in Tulsa when 461 Ocean Boulevard album that Clapton did came out. Jamie was on that album. They recorded it down at Criteria Studios in Miami, which that was where the guy that did a lot of Allman Brothers production. But anyway, Jamie was with Clapton from that moment up for like 20 years, traveled the world with him, toured the world with him. I mean, really became, like a real rock star, you know. I mean, he was really there, but he was a good friend of mine. And he recently passed away of lung cancer. But I do miss him. I miss talking to him. And he had me on stage with some really cool people a couple of times. And I thought that was sort of neat. One story is, I remember walking up on stage and Alto Reed was there with the Bullet Band. And Alto Reed comes up to me and sticks his hand out and shakes my hand. He says, "Man," he said, "I'm so glad to have you on stage." He said, "It's an honor to share the stage with you." And I'm thinking, wait a damn minute. Hold on now. You're telling me. I looked at Jamie, and Jamie was just over there like smiling like a, he looked like the canary that ate the cat that ate the canary, you know, like, I know something you don't or whatever. But anyway, after this great introduction that Alto Reed gave of himself to me and praise, I walked over to Jamie. I said, "What in the hell did you tell these guys?" Because George Terry was there too, and he did the same thing. And
now, these are like Silver Bullet Man, like Bob Seger. Oh yeah,
these are big just guys. So you know, George Terry. Terry also played guitar in the Eric Clapton band for years. I mean, he's good as Clapton, in my opinion.
Yes, these
are real players.
For real.
And,
dudes,
I asked Jamie, I said, "Jamie, what in the hell did you tell Alto Reed?" Alto Reed's not his real name, by the way.
Good name, though.
But anyway, his name's Tommy.
Alto definitely works.
But anyway, Tommy Cardinal, I can't remember his last. But anyway, it's Tommy. But anyway, Jamie said, he said, "Man," he said, "I had to tell him something." I said, "Well, I don't know what you told him, but whatever the hell it is, it worked, you know." So we had a good time that night, too, for sure. But Jamie was a great guy. He was a fun guy. He was full of life. And he was really full of life until about the last 2 weeks of his life. He was just upbeat, positive, you know, just everything. But all of a sudden, it just, you know, the switch was clicked and he was gone, you know.
Yeah.
That's what happens, I guess.
That's what we hope happens. I want to go that way.
Yep. Me too.
Fairly fast, you know.
Or very fast into a mountain.
Right.
You know, without a paraplane, I think it'd be fun into a mountain. Like jumping out of an airplane.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, that's one way.
Or you could be like my grandfather. You just wake up dead.
Did he wake up?
Figure of speech, of course. But no, he went to sleep one night, and that was the end of it, you know?
Well, it is. I mean, like, we do all sort of touch our mortal coils here a little bit, and then we start seeing. I'm in my 40s now, so I sort of see the end is closer than the beginning.
Well, you get to be my age, and those rows get a lot shorter.
Yes. Well, my father is about to turn 80, and like I know, he sees the end as much closer than the beginning.
Oh yeah,
but he's gotten a lot nicer.
I've lived longer than I'm going to live, you know, and that's a fact. But I try to live every day as good as I possibly can. I try to do something nice, either for myself or for some damn body, but just be nice, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, how hard is that? You know, open a door for somebody.
That's something I was talking with. Ben Carson guy was in town, the doctor that's like super smart.
Yeah.
And that was one of his things. He says, like, just try to be nice to somebody. Just be nice, nice to one person each day.
It's not that hard.
And go out of your way to do something nice.
Yeah. Open a door for somebody. Say thank you. You know, do something. Yeah. Just
or he's like, ask the person to your left to borrow $1,000. And so I mean, he didn't say that. I just want to borrow
$1,000.
One of my friends needs money for a lawyer, so we need to put a pool together.
You're gonna have to find somebody.
Go fund me. Crowdfunding it is. You know,
it's a lot of money too.
I think. I'm broke, and you're the last guy, bro. Sorry.
speaking of lawyers, I won't call his name, but I have a business partner that's a lawyer.
I was hoping you say Eddie Meacham because he's one of my favorite lawyers.
Oh yeah!
If you're ever in trouble, Meacham Law.
Meacham Law.
Well, he's with Van Camp, Meacham and something.
Doesn't he have a silly little saying? Like he's got like some catchphrase. I feel like I've heard it on the radio.
He's part of Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe.
Oh yeah, I like that one.
No, Eddie Meacham, he is the best. If you're ever in trouble, like, and you're in the Southern Pines, Moore County area, he's cool. He knows all the judges. He'll get you out. Trust me, I know.
Yeah.
But no, this guy he drives like an old Bronco or something. His kids are like probably the greatest kids ever made, and like that they might beat my kids. I'm not sure.
Cool.
No, they are. They're got long hair.
Yeah.
They got Rhodes scholars the Moorhead scholar to like UNC and stuff. Yeah. They're both really smart, but they smoke like not cigarettes.
Yeah.
But like they're all, not that that's cool, but it's just.
Like we still can't come out and say it. They smoke not cigarettes.
They smoke the weed.
People. The devil's lettuce.
I don't know if they smoke. The devil's lettuce. No, it's anyway. Sorry, I sidetracked your story, John. I was just thinking.
No.
I just love Eddie Meacham. I think he's a trip, man.
Yeah.
God. And like him, yeah, him and Key, like they made the perfect kids.
I have heard of that firm up here, yeah.
Yeah,
so, I have, yeah.
Well, they broke away from Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe. And
well, that's a good thing.
And that's a different firm. Yeah. I just love that. I think I heard that on The Simpsons for the first time.
But my partner's like, he's 75 years old. He's super successful. He is just a fun guy, you know. Once you get him out of his office, he's a different person. He's like two people, you know.
Right.
But we do have a lot in common, even though I'm not a lawyer. But we do have a lot in common. But it's kind of cool to have a business partner that is a lawyer, because you know, like setting up like LLCs and things like that. It's just, you know, make a phone call. What do you think about that? Yeah, let's do it. Next thing you know, it's done. You know.
That's awesome.
And but the good thing is I don't get a bill, you know, because we're business partners.
Because lawyers are expensive. Good yeah. Lord. They'll bill you for like answering your phone call, for sending an email, for doing a fax. I'm like, what the hell are you doing a fax for in the year 2022, friend?
Right, right.
Jeez Louise, that pisses me off. Like, yeah, it's going to be $30 for that fax.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do anything with a lawyer yet, so thanks for letting me know, Sean. All this.
Yeah, seriously.
Make a good friend, then I'm good.
When you call them, like, they start, the bill starts.
Timer
like,
starts.
Right now, clock started, yeah, that's right.
And they'll be like, okay, 20 minutes on an email is what it spends. That's going to be $100.
It spends 20 minutes on an email.
These lawyers do, because they
surround it up. Slim mechanics.
No, one of my good friends from high school is a lawyer. Henry, my friend, he helped Zach out in some of his stuff.
Yeah,
and like, and that is because like, guys, like, you know, young cats can't afford a lawyer.
No,
I mean, like, that's where back in the music business, that's where all these musicians, young cats, not us, young cats get screwed left and right by the managers and the agents and the booking. Like, if you sign the wrong or record deals,
whenever
you get a record deal, when you have to pay any money, it's not a record deal. But you've also signed away your rights, probably, and you're paying money to record in their studio.
I get screwed the
most.
My manager.
Oh my god! Yeah, you have no chance, dude.
She has done some amazing things thus far. Like what the things that we are able to accomplish without even having necessarily played
without
our
even
first
being
show.
A good band.
Yeah, without being a good band. Thanks, Baxter. Yeah, no, that helps.
little plug there.
Yeah, thank you. No, I mean, like, interviews and stuff like that. But that's what a manager should do. And they should be somebody who just hooks you up with opportunity.
Well,
you know?
Your manager, the fact that it's your girlfriend, like, that she's connected to you guys.
Yeah.
That's the whole idea of if you're a young cat and you're coming up, have somebody that's young. Doesn't have to be some old guy in a suit.
Well, she's fun. She does, like, all the art design and stuff like that because she's, you know, she is young. She's cool. She's like 22. That's cool.
That is cool. God, you guys are babies. You remember when you were 22?
Oh, it's been a while ago.
It was like 10 years back. And you're like, man.
I don't even know if I remember that. Mine hadn't been that far ago, but God, I can vaguely imagine being 22.
Well, just so y'all know, it's fun sometimes.
I think I vaguely remember that.
Fun.
Yeah,
it's fun.
I remember phases of it.
Yeah, phases. It's a lot of gray area there for me.
That's right. I have a general idea of which. Oh, yeah.
So, John, what's next for you, man? Anything else coming up?
What's next? Well, what's next is we're getting ready to hit the road again. We've got a lot of, when I say local stuff, I'm talking within
regional,
a few hours, you know, from here. The closest we do to where we're sitting right here would probably be Raleigh. We've got the Lincoln Theater coming up.
Have you guys played Derek's Place, the Rooster?
Where?
The small joint, just like
the Neon Rooster.
The Neon Rooster in Aberdeen?
Yes, we did. When Janet owned it.
When it was the Rooster's wife. Yeah,
when it was the Rooster's wife, we played there. And actually, she contacted me. This is a funny story. She contacted me and said she wanted me to get the band there. Of course, we had to go through management to do it. And I told her, I said, in order to get us there, I said, you know, you're probably going to lose money, you know, because of the capacity. And she said, well, I don't really care, you know. I want this band to play my place. So I can't remember what the tickets were. It seemed like the tickets were like 30, 20, 30, 40 bucks. I don't remember.
Yeah.
But it was, I mean, she had to charge, you know. Yeah. But now, I don't, whether she made money or lost money, I don't know. But that wasn't any of my business, really. But I did warn her, you know, fair warning, you know. But we got in there, and we did pack the place inside and out, and had a great show there. I mean, it was, and yeah, it was I'm so hoping, well attended.
I'm hoping you guys figure that out with Derek. He's sort of reconfigured the whole joint, spruced it up quite dramatically. Well,
John, you played there with the stage moved and everything. And
yeah, he's been to Blues Jams.
Yeah. Okay. What we could do, and what we did the last time we were there, all the drummers and the amps were on the stage.
Everybody else was on the floor?
And everybody else was on the floor. Wow. There's seven of us, you know. There's seven of us.
And a B3.
And a B3, two drummers and full percussion, you know. I mean, we take up a big footprint.
It'd be so much fun.
It'd be better now that the stage is at that far end.
It would be.
You guys, there'd be a few more options of
configuration. We could do it. You know, we're playing to get back to your question, we've got some really, really good venues coming up. We've got the Boathouse in Myrtle Beach.
The Lincoln's big,
We've
too.
Got the Lincoln. We do the Lincoln spot. About once a year or so, something like that. Then we've got some stuff in Georgia. We've got some stuff South Carolina. And then we have another northern tour, believe it or not.
Yes.
We start off in Buffalo.
Ooh.
No, Rochester, okay. I think. And then down to Buffalo. And then down to Ohio. And then back into Virginia, I think. So we've got that little swing coming up in July. But we've got a lot of really, really neat stuff in between and some short runs and things like that. So we've got some stuff coming up, you know.
Okay.
Management does a good job of getting us in route. They do a good job routing for us, you know, because
that's important. I do a lot of booking too, so if without it, it's hard. And
you got routing is
everything.
Is everything, man. You know, you can't route somebody in, say, New York City and then the next night, you know, be in Dallas. You just can't do that.
No.
I mean, you know, that's just not going to work.
No, and like jumping back to the Rooster, I think it would be possible with higher ticket sales, even prices down there, because, I mean, they have Christian Chenoweth is playing at the BPAC down here at the college. $125 a ticket. It's going to be sold out.
Wow.
The Ben Carson thing was sold out. It was all over $100 a ticket, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and they lost money on that. They didn't mind because they want to have great artists have it, sometimes. Right.
Yeah.
Well, we would love to do the Rooster again because it was just such a cool place. And now it's even cooler, you know, the way it's
super cool now.
Yeah.
The crowd there would love it. I think
new ownership has done a really good job there. I would like to say this since we're just throwing stuff out there, but my friend here to my right, Jonathan Robinson, is a pleasure to play with, but better yet, he's a pleasure to just know and be a friend of. He's a great guy, good family guy, got two beautiful children, a beautiful wife, you know, just a nice little unit thing going on. But he's a one hell of a damn guitar player. That's the funny part about it, you know.
Well, thank you, my friend.
He's just, you know, I don't like to say who's the best, who's not. There's not a best in my opinion. I just like to say that Jonathan Robinson is as good as they come, you know, with what he does.
Well, and also his son had his birthday yesterday, right?
That's true.
Eight years old. He looked like he turned 16.
He's the same age as my son for about four more days.
That's right.
But more importantly, than my son's birthday on the 27th, the Halo TV show drops on the 24th, which is what we've all been waiting for.
You've had your moment in the sun, William.
Sorry, son.
Sorry.
I think we're going to get like Derek's son and my boys might all get together and watch that show together.
That'd be cool.
That'd be a cool thing to do, yeah.
Well, we do bad. We watch violent science fiction way too young for our children together. Give them nightmares.
It's a rite of passage, you know.
Hopefully the flood comes in this one already, and it's just like, you know, parasitic life forms destroying humans. Man,
they'll do
great.
A good job of that with the CGI. It'll be so
I
good.
Hope so. $10 million an episode, you're saying.
It'll be good.
It's a lot of money. That's more than Isle of Wild South gets paid per show.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
I don't know.
Who knows?
I think that it probably is. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say it's more.
Probably so.
You guys aren't getting $10 million.
Another name pops in my mind that was kind of interesting. If a lot of people may not know who he is because he's been gone since 95, I think. There's a guy from Ireland by the name of Rory Gallagher.
Yeah, we know that guy.
That was just, I mean, he was like on fire, you know, back in the early 70s and through the 70s and through the 80s, you know. But I met those guys through an agent that I knew, and he put me with these guys, and I hung out with them for a couple of weeks, and they were absolutely as much fun as anybody I've ever been around, that whole bunch of them.
He's a nice guy, isn't he?
He's a very nice guy. Really nice. Yeah, well, he was. Yeah, he was very, and so humble. I mean,
I've heard that about him.
Just like super sweet, yeah, I'm Roy Gallagher, and who are you? You know, kind of a thing. I mean, but what I meant by that was, I'm Roy Gallagher, but more importantly, who are you? You know, not who are you, but yeah. who right, are you? Right. Let's talk about you. Let's not talk about me.
Because your delivery wasn't wrong the first time. I knew what you meant.
Right. That's the reason I clarified it. Like, that's exactly the reason I clarified it.
I'm Roy Gallagher.
No, no, no. It's more importantly, who are you? You know, but that's the way he was. And there was a guy that played keyboard, piano with him, Lou Martin. And we used to joke about being cousins, and of course we weren't, but he was a neat guy, and McAvee, the bass player, but Rod Diath he's one of my all-time favorite drummers. He was like, he played open-handed, and for you drummers out there, you know what I mean by that, but he played open-handed, and he was just so damn good. I mean, even when he didn't do something exactly right, it was still right, you know,
right,
no matter what, you know. But he was excellent. But he was a neat guy, real skinny fella, didn't weigh much, soaking wet, probably 130 pounds, 145 Ooh. Pounds at the most, you know, just a really small guy, but really long brown hair, just a neat guy. But Rory Gallagher was outstanding on guitar. He was a great singer, good songwriter. He could take a song that someone else did and literally claim it, make it his, you know. One, for example, is Messing with the Kid.
Yeah.
When he did that one, it was like, whoa, you know, that was like, God almighty, that's a good song, you know. I mean, but he didn't write it.
A side note of that, just if you're ever in a room with John Cruise, the guitar builder, since this is a guitar channel too, and you want to sort of piss him off, just like be like, man, I hate Rory Gallagher. Just say that.
Oh, yeah? You love Rory Gallagher?
Yeah, I mean, that's like, yeah, all those guys in that sort of, that's John's world, I think.
Yeah,
so I get that. It's just have some, I'm gonna do it next time I see him in person. I'm like, God,
you know, so you know who's overrated?
Overrated. Yeah. Like,
here's what I think is
what
funny.
A jerk he was.
Right. He was such an asshole.
A mean kid.
What is funny to me about Rory Gallagher in this world that we live in of custom shop guitars? There are all these people who have never, not even heard one note of like Rory Gallagher play,
but
they know that because like he was famous for that Strat that had like no paint left.
Yeah. Oh my God.
One little piece of orange.
And you can get a version of it, you know, from the custom shop. It's the Rory Gallagher Strat. And I think people like it cause it's just beat to hell, but they don't really know. They've not really listened to Rory Gallagher. And then I even have people say, oh yeah, I want this thing like super heavy rev or like heavy relict, not Rory Gallagher, but you know, but like next to
of
it.
That too, which is funny. Then you get people that are just like dissing on relics and custom. I was like, there's no way a guitar could get that relic. Like,
and you're like, look at it.
Just look at Rory's. And then there's a thousand other ones just like it that are beat to hell. Because I don't beat mine that way. But you know, Rory is a sweat monster.
Well, I was going to bring that up. And I'm going to bring up an important detail. Every screw in that guitar was rusty. And it was because, and the paint and everything wasn't because he drug it behind his car.
He sweated
all over the damn thing all the time. I mean, but every screw in that thing was even rusty.
I'm a sweaty.
The salt, I guess, in the body just coming out.
When Jonathan, you sweat a lot when you play too, but you also play shirtless.
That's true.
So that's why he doesn't get buckle rash. He gets belly rash.
Right. Just hair sweat everywhere.
And the hair sticks to the finish. And pulls out these cool.
John's like, what have I gotten into?
But there was a reason he sweat like that. Because when I was around him, it was in like warmer months. I can't remember if it was spring, summer, fall, whatever. But it was the warmer months. And he always wore damn flannel shirts. And I used to say, what the hell are you doing with a flannel shirt, man? It's hot. He went, well, this is all I got. I went, well,
some people just
why don't you go buy something else, you know?
Well, but he wore flannel shirts. From that part of the world, too, over in lovely UK land, it's like everything's, you know, everything's cold.
Everything's cold and wet. You know, in Ireland. You know.
Or just go to Europe. I'm sure he's touring Spain and Germany and France. It gets warm over there, too.
Yeah.
I mean, like, all those things are true, but if you watch that dude,
he sweats.
There's some guys who just stand and they play And what? But if you watch Rory Gallagher, you know, eyes closed, he's moving, he's intense. Like when you're that intense and giving it everything, I mean, you just you are going to sweat.
He left everything on stage. He didn't when he went on stage, he poured it out.
That's right.
And when he walked off, he left it right there.
That's
because it was a performance. Every performance was stellar. I mean, I was around him a good bit, and I just couldn't believe. Like at the end of every show, I was worn out at the end of every show,
right.
just watching it, you know, side stage, you know, just, I mean, like, wow, that was hard on me. What do you mean it was hard on you? You didn't do a damn thing. You know, sitting in a row, sitting over there drinking beer, you know.
when did he pass away?
I think around 95 or 94. I can't recall exactly. It's just been, it's been 94. I'd say 94.
Yeah.
Don't quote me on that, but yeah. I'm close.
The internet will find out. Don't worry.
There you go. It's easy, you know. Sure. Just ask Google, you know.
That's it.
But, you know, I've been so lucky and so fortunate. And I'll tell you, I'm really lucky and fortunate to play with the band that I play with. I mean, it's great. Now, I did have Traffic Jam.
95, you're right.
95?
Yep.
Yeah, is that what it is? Is that what Miss Google said?
That's right.
Oh, cool.
Complications following a liver transplant.
Yes. Damn. Writing about what I write about, I've often wondered about his death, actually, because it was complications. Well, what were the complications?
Right. You know,
I mean,
it covers
did
a lot
somebody
ground, yeah.
make a mistake? You know, because here's the thing. Doctors are just like you and I. They're human beings. They're not God. They got an MD degree. But, you know, teachers have degrees. Lawyers have degrees, you know, I mean, so bottom line is they're human is what I'm trying to say. And all humans that I know of in a figure of speech here, we've all run a stop sign.
Yeah.
Didn't mean to. It wasn't planned. It wasn't intentional.
Well, even with a liver transplant, I mean, there's besides like the doctor, there's just sometimes your body just doesn't take it.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's another part of your body that's just not going to work with it.
That's exactly right.
And, you know, listen to, you know, jumping back to Ben Carson, when he was talking about like when he got into neuroscience and he got into sort of pediatric sides of it, he was like, I really like to work on things where there's a return on my investment.
Mm-hmm.
So when I save a kid's life, I got 60, 70 more years. When I save an 80-year-old life, I might have 3 more years.
Right.
You know, so it's just, but it's like, yeah, when you are like 80 and you're on the operating, let's say you're getting like a huge transplant of some sort in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
there's so many other parts of your body that might just fail at that point too.
Well, and also for me now, just speaking from my viewpoint, if I'm 80 years old, I don't know if I want to go through
that
or not. And another thing, if I'm 80 years old and I need a transplant, there's somebody
100%.
That's 15 years old that needs that transplant.
That's right.
At 80, I mean, like right now, I've lived a full life. I have zero complaints. Now, don't misunderstand me. I don't want to check out anytime soon, and I'm going to go kicking and screaming. But if I'm 80, I think that I would like to have the foresight and the kindness in me and the humanity in me to give that organ, life-saving organ, to a 15-year-old or a 12-year-old or a 10-year-old or to a 35-year-old, you know. Because I've lived my life. I've lived it now, you know, and I have no complaints. But, you know, that's kind of how I look at that.
Yeah, I think that's...
I wish more people did look at it that way. You know what I mean?
You know, and people, you know, like granddad's 95 years old. He's been laying there in a coma for 5 years. And he has went through all of his wealth. Mm-hmm. The family is struggling to keep him where he is. What's up with that?
Yeah.
Call Dr. Kevorkian, man. Do the humane thing.
Dr. Kevorkian's dead too, isn't he? I think that guy passed on as well.
I know my grandfather and my uncle, we all used to work together on boats and cars and stuff like that, and they still do that. But we always had that kind of like pat, I guess, or whatever. Like that's what we talk about, is if anybody got to the point where it's like, if I'm in a wheelchair, you know, I can't get around or whatever. Dig a hole out back for
Well, see, I've been helpless before in my life through my illness, and I never, and I repeat, never want to be helpless again, because that is no way to live, you know. Now, I wasn't helpless long, but I was. I was dependent, you know, mm-hmm. for everybody, somebody to do everything for me, you know. Yep. And that's just no way to live, you know, not in my opinion.
I agree. I've always thought
I don't want to sit there and watch somebody breed. The hell with that, yeah. you know.
If yeah. I become a vegetable, you know, I've always said, like, pull the plug. And they're like, but what if? I was like, I can't worry about what if, yeah. you know. It's like, because what if I'm there for another 10, 15, 20
You can always say that, what if, right?
That's just my point when I said granddad's laying there 95. He's been in there for 5 years in a coma and – all he's doing, he's gone through all of his wealth, you know, and the family's struggling.
That idea.
That's crazy.
He's not him anymore, you know.
No, he's not him. That's not your grandfather.
Because if I was the guy laying there and I've worked my ass off to, like, mm-hmm. give something to my children, do you know what I mean? And, like, I'm laying there. Just, I might as well be burning money in a pile.
That's what you're doing. You are burning money.
That's such a graphic, visceral way to think of
it. You know, like, I tell my kids and my wife that all the time. Like, we could have just taken this stack of $100 bills and throw them in the yard and set them on fire.
I'm glad you used the term $100 bills because that's exactly what I was thinking. Exactly.
Yeah, you know?
Throwing $100 bills right in the fire. Stacks of them.
$1 bills barely count anymore. I don't even know what you can do with $1. No. Well, there's one thing, but, you know.
You play the little arm machine that tries to grab the toy.
There you go.
Abby loves that so much.
I love those too. I'm really
good
at them.
She would empty our savings to play the claw machine.
I'm all with Abby on that. It's a good investment.
Just 50 more cents.
We're going to win this time. I'm like, darling, you can never win. You'll never win. Look, the claw. They're not rigid.
It's like the lottery. It's like the lottery.
We took them bowling the other day. She could care less. She's just like, let me play that claw machine, Daddy. Please. You know.
Bless her.
Like, no, we spent $20 in the claw machine.
Oh, so, yeah. Well, there you go.
John, before we go, tell us everyone the name of your books and the best place for them to get
them. Okay, sure, yeah. The first book that was published is called Seeking Justice with a subtitle. And it is available in every format on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and through Ingram Content. It's available at any major bookstore nationally.
Awesome.
And book two is the same way, and book three will be the same, and so on and so forth. Or I've had a lot of people ask me for signed books. I've got a quick little story I want to throw in. I'm in a couple of cities, and we were on stage, and right at we finished playing probably the encore. And the bass player turns to me and says, hey, man, you got a couple fans at the edge of the stage. I think we were in either Greenville, North Carolina, or up near D.C. or somewhere. There were two ladies holding up my book.
That's
and
awesome.
Giving the little sign, like, "Come, can you sign my book?" And that was sort of neat, you know, to have that happen. But I had a lot of people asking me for signed copies and how do I get one because I can't get one through Amazon, you know. And so I said, well, so what I did, I've got an IT guy that I've got an operating agreement with, and he takes care of my website stuff. But I told him, I said, let's get a merch account, put on the website, and that way I can sell books, you know, right there. They put the credit, just like I have a shopping cart, you know, just like everybody else.
Well, that's better, because that way the money doesn't go through everybody else.
Well, that's true. That's exactly right. That's exactly
Amazon
right.
Amazon takes their pound of flesh.
It goes to the artist, yeah.
But the thing is, I had that done, and people can buy the book right off my website, which the website is really easy to remember, RolandJBeckerman.com. That's pretty simple, you know.
Pretty good, yeah.
RolandJBeckerman.
Beckerman, yes.
.com. That's a cool website. I'm going to steal that. I'm going to be RolandJBeckerman3.com. It's going to be my thing.
There you go. But you can go on the website, and now you can buy. I've got buttons on the website where you can click on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and buy it directly through them. But an exclusive offer on the website is you can also click on that and it goes to my shopping cart and then you have to fill it out. And if you want it signed a certain way, you can have, there's a little space you can, you know, to Billy Bob, you know, my friend or whatever, you know, and you can have that done however you want it done. And I've got mailers and I mail them out and, they'll, you know, and I usually keep a stock and, you know, at home. That I can mail stuff out. So cool. That's kind of how that all works.
That's awesome.
So you can buy it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or any major bookstore nationally. Also ebooks, you know, iTunes, Amazon iTunes, you can get it there too, you know, that kind of stuff. So every format.
You have a book signing coming up too.
I do have a book signing coming in Charlotte. The number one bookstore one of the number one bookstores in the entire Southeast, actually, is Park Road Books in Charlotte. It's been there for like 40 years. And I'm going there, and it's going to be a seated event. It's going to be a book discussion slash signing. And I'm going to talk about both books. And I think there's going to be a few people there. At least a few people have said that they're going to come. So we'll have a place for them to sit and go through and talk about books and, you know, and maybe sell some books. Who knows, you know. I will say this, too. This is something that I don't want to say too much about, but it is truth. There's a possibility that I might be working with someone in production that is a producer that likes the way I write, likes what I write about, and has kind of compared it to like Perry Mason and crazy stuff like that. So who knows? Angela one day Lansbury. It could be on Netflix or, you know, Amazon Prime or
as awesome. Long as it's not on Peacock, we're okay with it.
All right. I'll tell them no Peacock.
Peacock. I mean, if you got it, but
yeah, it's really got the attention of a couple of people that have done film, and I'm kind of hoping that might just sort of come to fruition, you know, because if it does, then that's going to open up more doors, you know. So.
Very cool.
John Martin sells out on Casino Guitars Podcast right here for us, ladies and gentlemen. Take the high road. High road to the bank account.
That's it.
No, seriously, congratulations, John. That's thank exciting. You.
That
that's
is good.
And thanks for having me, guys. This has just been a real coming. Honor yeah, and man, pleasure.
It's been fun
and,
partying.
I just, you know, you guys are just the best, and... hey, man, let's play some music.
John
know.
Has not put down that bottle of whiskey since we started either, so he isn't going to have a hard time getting out.
There you go. Fun there day. You go.
Thanks again, John.